If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Lord Ashtar's First 1953 Earth Contact. George Van Tassel, Giant Rock, the Integratron, and my experiences with all of the above. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath. And call yourself forward into perfect divine alignment, into your physical envelope, and just bless yourself, bless your being, bless your incarnation. Anchor your presence. That's why we're here on Earth, to anchor divine love direct from the Supreme Creator through our physical vehicles. So, two nights ago, on our public broadcasting system, they aired a show on George Van Tassel, Giant Rock, the Integratron. And I was so inspired and taken back to that time that I spent in the 60s and 70s with George Van Tassel and Giant Rock and the Integratron, that I wanted to share my direct experience. The things that Van, as we call Van Tassel, the things that Van personally shared with me, as well as some of the early history that maybe has not been known, because very many of the people that were involved back then have since left the body, including Van Tassel. And that's part of my story as well. So let's get started. Lord Ashtar, Commander Ashtar, who is the head of the Galactic Command on a galactic level, made his very first entry into this sector in which Earth is located for the very first time on July, I believe it was the 18th, 1953. And the person he contacted was Colonel George Van Tassel, a man who at the time was living with his wife out in an area called Giant Rock. Giant Rock Airport, there was a little airport there, and he and his wife ran a cafe called the Giant Rock Cafe. It was way out in the desert, 2.5 miles east of Los Angeles, 20 miles from Joshua Tree National Forest, in a little place called Landers, which back then, I contacted Van Tassel the first time in 1968. So it was barren. There was nothing out there but this ginormous rock, which was sacred to the Native Americans. It was called Big Rock, and only the elders were allowed into its proximity because of the great spirits that were said to inhabit and surround that sacred rock. So probably for hundreds of years, that rock had been venerated as a vortex of spiritual energy. Anyway, when I went there the first time in 1968, there was this Giant Rock Cafe, I think that's what it was called, and George Van Tassel was holding what he called golden density channelings of the space beings, primarily the Venusians from the Ashtar Command. As far as I know, that's all he contacted, but I'm not sure about that. I attended some of these Golden Density meetings way back then. They were very popular. Large groups of people came, sometimes as many as 500. But most of all, what I enjoyed was Doris, Van's wife, who made the best cherry pie ever. So I remember all of that. So what happened was that Lord Ashtar contacted Van Tassel, George Van Tassel, on July 18th, 1953, in response to our detonation of the atom bomb. Now, the Venusians and the Galactic Command had heard a vibration emanate from the Earth that they interpreted as a cry of distress. I suppose when you detonate living energy, such as the atoms, it emits a cry, which could be heard. But anyway, that was what caused him, for the very first time, to enter our planetary sector. Lord Ashtar has never had a physical incarnation upon this Earth. He is probably eons of levels of evolution beyond where that would be, you know, even in the game plan at all for him. As far as I'm aware, Lord Ashtar is an immortalized person, a person who has attained that level that we call a Chiranajivi, an immortalized being of light, and is incredibly highly evolved. For that reason, generally speaking, it's Lord Manka that supervises the planet Earth and acts as a sort of legal guardian from the Saturnian Council to mediate the affairs of Earth with the Galactic Command as a whole and Commander Ashtar, who is the head of the Ashtar Command, along with Lord Sananda, who is our spiritual master. So Lord Ashtar, at that time, came and contacted George Van Tassel, who was an Earth-based emissary from the Ashtar Command. I'm not sure how conscious he was of that at the time. Perhaps he was, perhaps he wasn't. But he was very much into the science, we would call it quantum physics now, the science that was taught to him by Nikola Tesla, and spirituality. He was a very spiritual man. And so he was very much involved with bringing forward the integration and synthesis of science and spiritual principle and advanced technology. So what happened was that shortly after he contacted George Van Tassel and expressed his concern about the detonation of the hydrogen atom, which is a living being, and it's a violation of galactic protocol, he had another contact. And it happened like this. It's very interesting. I heard this story from Van himself. It's been many years. I hope I can recall it accurately. But he and his wife at the time, Doris, were sleeping outside. This is 1953, 54, shortly after Ashtar had contacted him. And by the way, I'm not certain if that contact was through ham-operated radio, which was very popular with contactees in the 50s. Many of the space people contacted Earth people through the ham radio, or if it was telepathic, which is the usual modus operandi. I'm not sure, and I never asked Van about it. But it was a hot night. They were out in the Mojave Desert. Landers is out, you know. You know, there's Joshua trees and sagebrush. I live a short distance from there, so I live in the same sort of terrain. But at night, it was hot, and there was no air conditioning in the 50s. So he and his wife were sleeping outside on the ground, and he was fast asleep, and he had a sense that somebody was calling him. And he looked up to see this tall, very handsome man in a form-fitting suit, uniform, spacesuit, with long golden hair. And he said, "I am Sulgonda. I've come to show you some things." And then elbowed his wife to wake her up. But she was fast asleep. This was to be an experience just for him. So she remained asleep. And Van got up and followed Sulgonda to his spacecraft, which had landed and was parked not too far away. And he took him on board and showed him all of this marvelous technology, which Van was so excited about because these were the very things that he had been writing about in articles, and he'd written several books, and, you know, he was really excited. And he said, "We would like to give a gift to your planet. Because of the sun and the effects of the sun that comes through your atmosphere, premature aging is prevalent in your world. And because of certain anomalies in the vibrational field, there is premature aging, there's disease, there's all of these things that we do not have on Venus. And we would like to help you. Would you be interested in collaborating with us on a project?" And of course, Van said, "Yes, I would." So this is how the plans were drafted, I suppose. I didn't ask him, and he didn't tell me the details of how he actually got the blueprints. But I'm assuming that he had repeated contacts with Sulgonda, at least telepathically, if not physically, where he was given the exact instructions of how to construct this building that is now called the Integratron. It is in Landers, California, 2.5 miles east of Los Angeles, out in the Mojave Desert. And you can go visit it if you want to. It's there. It's being taken care of by three sisters who are very passionate about preserving the history of the Integratron and keeping that area, shall we say, sacred for the public that are now allowed to make reservations and visit and experience the Integratron. And they're using a form of coherent sound now that they'll put you in a chamber on the upper floor, and they will play crystal bowls that create a coherent field of sound that people have had some marvelous experiences with that, and that's what they're being guided to do as of today. So anyway, George Van Tassel and his wife were out sleeping, outdoors on their sleeping bags. Van had gotten up and gone with Sulgonda. He had been given the offer, because nobody forces these things on you, to build this Integratron. Now, the purpose of the Integratron was to basically extend life indefinitely. I mean, we don't have disease and death like you have on Earth, on Venus. And that's my home of my most recent planetary origin was Venus. I came to Venus and was born physically on this Earth, but with a clear recall of having been brought here from a world quite different than Earth. And one of the things that shocked me the most was the fact that people died. I couldn't figure out where the light would go when something was alive 1 minute and the eyes had light and vitality, and then the next minute the eyes go dead and there's no light. And that's what led me to my spiritual path when I was a very young child. And I wanted to know where the light went. Where did the light go when my cats and dogs would die, as they frequently did in the 50s because they put out poison, DDT and things of that nature back then. So anyway, that's how the Integracon became constructed over a period of years, because Van had to stop periodically to amass more funds, you know, and as the funds came in, he would keep on working on the Integratron. When I saw it, it was fully intact, basically as it is today, but was left five percent short of full completion. And I'll deal with that later, but I want to tell you some of the things that we were doing with the Integratron at that time. My husband and I, also a Venusian, happens to be a Venusian master, John Eversoll, whose Ashtar command name is Shantar. He and I were on the board of directors of what Van Tassel had created and called the College of Universal Wisdom. And he had created a small replica, but exactly doing the same thing in the replica that the large Integratron was designed to do. And basically, it was to reset time to a point prior to where an accident or a death or a disease had gotten established. And what he shared with my husband and I was that they had, a person had badly cut his finger, and they reset the time on the little replica of the Integratron to before that injury had occurred, and the cut finger instantly healed. Then they had smashed the lizard and set the time back before the time when the lizard had died, and the lizard reanimated to life. Then they did various other experiments of tearing leaves up and putting them in the machine, and again, the field, the resonating field within the Integratron, the little mini version, reconstructed the leaves, whatever they put in there, and set back the time before the event, reconstructed and reanimated. So they were pretty excited about that. Now, the process was to create, and by the way, the Integratron was made entirely of wood. It's a dome, and it fits together like a Chinese puzzle. There's lots of Tesla technology in it, I would imagine, because Tesla was a Venusian scientist who came to Earth to give us all of these wonderful inventions, which had we had Westinghouse and the others not, you know, wanted to create something to make money, we would have abundant free energy on the planet today. We wouldn't have the aging. We wouldn't have the disease. We wouldn't have any of this stuff if people had only availed themselves of the things that the Venusians had come to give us, and one of them, of course, being Commander Valiant Thor. I'm trying to shift frequency here. Commander Valiant Thor offered, again, more recently in the 60s, this same kind of technology, and again, it was refused. So it's too bad we're in the situation we are today. And it's only because of the greed and avarice and selfishness of the few that the masses of humanity are suffering as they are today, with all these horrible diseases and various things that are completely unnecessary. We just don't have them on Venus at all. So anyway, my husband and I were part of the board of directors for this College of Universal Wisdom, in which George would have these monthly meetings, and we would discuss the progress of the Integratron, and he would share the various things that they were doing. The Integratron fitting is fitted together completely with wood. There's the first and second floor. And there is a very, very powerful energy that when it was turned on, I guess it was turned on to some extent during the time that Van was still on, you know, on the physical body, that it created lightning. It kind of looked like some of those pictures you'd see of Nikola Tesla with all the lightning and everything coming out of the field. And there was a metal field with diodes around it that created an electrostatic field. And that was the only part that had metal and the only part that levitated on air and was spun by air and rotated and created this incredible field that created the healing and the rejuvenation and the cellular regeneration of this electrostatic field that was created, this coherent field. And people would walk through, the thing was that people would walk through the field. They wouldn't, like, sit in there. It was very quick. You just walk through. And that the disease or whatever it was in the body, the dissonant field, simply was made coherent. It was simply dissolved in the coherency of the perfect divine frequency. So it's pretty marvelous. Now, Van told us that the space people had decided not to complete it because they realized that humanity at its present state at that time, which again, we're talking the 50s and the 60s and perhaps into the 70s, that humanity just wasn't awake enough to make use of having a life extension. You know, why extend the life of a person who is simply going to live like an ego and create more karma and, you know, better to leave the body, reincarnate, have more experiences, and evolve. And then, you know, you have a reason to extend the life. Otherwise, it's just, you know, more karma and creating more mischief on the planet through our unconsciousness. According to what Van told us, that's why it was not completed. I believe today we are, and this is my speculation, but I believe today there is a sufficient number of people who are awake and would very much benefit by this technology. Today the technology is all about sound and matching the particular frequency and resonant field of organs with their whole coherent field, so that if the organ lacks coherency and is in disarray, let's say, out of resonance, it can be reestablished with the proper vibration tone. And of course, this is a very esoteric subject. But the new medicine, the new healing today is totally sonar-based. I would say it's light and sound-based, light, sound, and color-based. But it basically comes down to a frequency. And if you know the correct frequency to put into, and you know, some of the biofeedback and radionics and these various technologies, we're all aiming at this particular manner of healing and restoring the coherency of a physical organism and its organs so that everything works in harmony, so that there's a balance of the chakras and the subtle bodies and the physical body, all of that. So dis-ease is wherever there's a dissonance in the vibratory frequency of an organ or a person. They're out of alignment, basically, with their wholeness. So it's very exciting because now the Integratron, for the first time, is open to the public. They even have an online gift shop. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them on Facebook. I mean, they're out there. You can contact them. You can make an appointment. And they will take you and give you a sound bath, because now they're doing these sound bath treatments up in the upper floor of the sanctuary. where there's a very powerful vortex in the center of the room that's completely coherent. And as they play the crystal bowls, you basically are reestablished in your proper frequency, your proper resonant field. And I guess it's pretty popular because people go there from all over the world to experience this. They also have UFO conventions and different things that happened there. During the early years when I was out there in the 60s and 70s, and starting, I think, in 1956, George Van Tassel started, I'm trying to think how often they were offered. I don't remember if they were monthly or annual or what, but periodically he would have space conventions there. And in the 50s, there were many, many direct contactees, people who had actually been physically contacted, physically taken aboard ship, physically taken off planet to other planets, physically returned, and had an ongoing relationship with these space people who are human. They don't have big eyes. They don't have gray bodies. They're not anything like the so-called aliens that are depicted. I personally have been on ship many, 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 many times, have met also beings that were from another planet that are living on Earth at this time, and they're just like us. You can't even tell the difference, except they smile. They look you in the eyes. They really listen when you speak, and they're full of joy and peace. And that makes them rather conspicuous, I would say. So, there were at that time many, many groups that would get their information directly from the space people through ham radio. And this, of course, can't be any kind of phony baloney, because you're actually on an apparatus talking to a real person that's speaking your language. And they have a little translator thing that they wear around their waist where they can translate any language from any person anywhere by just, you know, pushing one of those little button gadgets they have on their belts. So that's no problem, but their main way of communicating when they don't have to go through, you know, the laborious process of physical talk is telepathic. And all of us who are ground-based personnel, such as myself, are in constant telepathic rapport with the Ashtar Command. This is, you know, this is just goes with our particular work. Sometimes you'll mistake their communique for your own thoughts. I asked Ashtar about that one time, and I said, I can't tell the difference when I'm thinking and when you're speaking. And he says, because there is no difference. What makes you think that your thoughts are different from mine? So that made me think for a while. But anyway, I've developed that ability over many, many years of working with the Ashtar Command. I've been working in conscious mission for the Ashtar Command since 1963. So I would imagine I could hear from them very well by now, wouldn't you think? So, what else do I want to tell you about this? I got involved with Van Tassel in an interesting way. I have to backtrack a little bit here. I met my husband-to-be, John Ebersole, 3 years before I met him physically. And I met him aboard ship. Ashtar said that we would be meeting, and we were to marry and do the work, you know, the work that we do. And so I knew him by his aura. You know, aboard ship, I could see his light body and his energy field and aura. And I knew that vibration, but I couldn't make out his features. So 3 years after I had been involved with my first Ashtar Command mentor, I was working in what was called the Station of Cosmic Light, the etheric counterpart of the Ashtar Command. It was located in Las Vegas, Nevada, on the corner of Fremont and the Strip at that time, and was known also as Berta Specialties. But really, it was a training base for 10 people who were to be teachers for the Ashtar Command, and I was one of those people. And the Ashtar Command sent the woman who was the owner of the store, Virginia Berta, to locate me, find me, bring me into the store, and start training me for my work, which I've done ever since. So anyway, one day I was cleaning our altar because we had this beautiful sanctuary that was dedicated to all world faiths. And we had the votive candles, and I had my arms full of candles. I was cleaning the altar. And I saw this man standing up at the in front of the store, and the command said, "That's him. Go up and meet him." And so I put the candles down, and I went up, and the minute I stepped in his aura, I recognized his vibration. And so he was just in Las Vegas for that one day, and so all of our courtship took place over the telephone. He proposed to me over the telephone, and a month later we were married. He lived in Yucca Valley, which was kind of a mecca for all of the early people involved with the Ashtar Command. They were all there. The person, Teska Deska, who was the person that Tuwela got her mission from, lived there. Saleya Winkler, that did all of the drawings of the Ashtar Commanders, lived there. Gabriel Green lived nearby. My gosh, there were all these Ashtar people that lived in Yucca Valley at that time that were our friends. And my husband had a home there, and he was a stockbroker for the New York Stock Exchange. And, I mean, that was it. I moved from Las Vegas to live with him, of course. We got married a month later. And at that time, we had a visitor that was very wise. We used to refer to him as a master. He wore a turban, and he was just very illumined. And he was the one that told us about the UFO conventions that were being held out at Giant Rock. And he said, I also met a very interesting man. His name is John Roger. And he also has space connections. And I think you should meet him. Well, we didn't pay much attention at the time. I don't think the movement of spiritual inner awareness had come into any format at 1968. But years later, when I was cleaning out some old papers, I came upon the flyer that this man, Henry Conyers, had given us that was advertising John Roger, who was at that time meeting in people's living room and just basically having satsang, you know, just kind of talking about different things. But he was very involved with Ashtar and told me one time, he said, you know, Ashtar and I are very good friends. And he said, if you're in the hands of Ashtar, you're in very good hands indeed. And one time I was walking down the stairs at Prana, where in the ashram that John and I lived in after a while, and I overheard him, and I'm sure he was saying it loud enough so I could hear it. He was talking to Russell Bishop, who founded Insight with him back in 78. He was walking down the stairs behind me, and he said, you know, John Eversole is a master from Venus. And so I thought that was interesting. Anyway, we were well known in those early days. We started going to the conventions and listening to all these wonderful stories of people who had had actual physical contact. We had had, John and I had had many, many inner plane experiences with the Ashtar Command. And, you know, and we were part of all of that, but at that time we hadn't been physically taken aboard ship, but taken in our subtle bodies, because after certain technology came on the planet, it was too dangerous then for that same kind of approach, as it was fine, you know, in the 50s. But now, you know, they have this technology, they can actually damage a ship or the personnel if they are vibrating in the third density to be visible here. They can if we raise our vibrations to a certain level. But, you know, if you lower yourself enough to actually land and physically interact in the third density, then there's some danger to the beings. I don't think it would damage Ashtar. I mean, he's already immortalized, but not everyone is at that same level of evolution that Ashtar is in. So, anyway, from 1956 to 1977, they were holding these UFO conventions at Giant Rock. And there were there'd be people like George Hunt Williamson, Orfeo Angelucci, George Adamski, Daniel Fry, Hal Wilcox, of course, George Van Tassel, and others who would speak. And these are all people who had physical interaction aboard ship. I also spoke, not as an official person on the program, but we would have our little, what would you say, booths, alcoves, places where people could interact with you, kind of like in the Kumbh Mela. And I would tell my story of having come from Venus and you know, share the things that I had experienced growing up as a conscious person coming from another planet who never had the veil drop. So I always knew who I was, where I was from, even though I didn't have a specific name for it until I met my first teacher. And in the first sentence that she said, you're from Venus. You're from the Ashtar Command. We're supposed to work together. And anyway, that was my introduction to that. That was about 64, I think, 1963, 64. So anyway, it was a incredible time to be part of all of this. And I think I'm so fortunate, because I have been on the planet for the entire time that the space people have been contacting Earth. And here we are at the time when we're going to be having very direct envoys that are going to make it unmistakably known that we need help to get through the Earth changes that we are in the midst of, and the transition to the new Earth and into the new paradigm. And it will have to be recognized and invited by the world governments, because they are the ones that the Space Command is supposed to connect with. So there's going to come, I believe, something that's going to, according to Sai Baba, bring humanity to their knees, and they're going to have to call out for help. And then, of course, we're right there in the wings just waiting for that open invitation so that we don't violate consciousness in any way, you know, the prime directive thing. So John and I were very, very close to Van Tassel. We were regulars in their home. They had a mobile home. The cafe is no longer there. And when we were interacting with them in the 70s, we were frequent visitors at their home, and we would bring friends very often who would give anything to talk to someone who had actually met a real space person. And we did. We took many of our friends, and for some it was like the high point of their whole life, to finally meet, you know, directly someone who had connection with Ashtar, the Ashtar Command. So, what else do I want to tell you here? Oh, yeah. George Van Tassel had excavated, and I'm not sure if it was him or it had already been excavated, but underneath Giant Rock there was an excavation and a sanctuary that he created where he would meditate and receive the telepathic, and I don't know, operational messages from the space people. So on January 1st, 1969, I was ordained in Van's sanctuary underneath Giant Rock. And I remember I carried a copy of the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ by Levi, and I was dressed in my purple and white ministerial robe. My husband and I were married in matching white and purple ministerial robes, so I wore that. And just before the ordination ceremony, a pure white cat descended the stairs from out of nowhere. Nobody owned the cat. Nobody knew anything about the cat. The cat was never seen again. But the cat came down the stairs, hopped up on one of the empty chairs, sat very quietly and respectfully during the ordination. As soon as the ordination was finished, it jumped off the chair and quietly exited up the stairs and vanished. So, we don't know who the cat was. I just assumed it was Ashtar, but who knows? Because those advanced beings can assume any form that they wish. You know, they're not stuck with any one particular form. So I literally the minister that came out from under the rock. Oh, my gosh. So we loved hearing Van talk because he would talk about space beings that he had met. I remember he was talking about one that had blue skin and was had no bones. You know, he was like a Gumby. He could bend his body any way at all, you know, that he wished to. And he would tell us stories and things like that that had happened. It's been so very many years for me. I can't remember anymore other than the blue Gumby kind of person. But we loved being with him and hearing him talk and share his experiences. And it was so normal at the time, you know, you don't realize, oh my gosh, these are the golden age. These are the golden days. These are the, you know, the wonderful, wonderful days. In fact, I remember as a very young child when they had the 47 UFOs that flew over the White House, very, very, very first sighting. I remember the headlines in the paper when they had the UFO, they called them flying saucers in those days, when the flying saucers had crashed in Roswell. I remember seeing the headlines. I remember all of the speculation and stories about the UFOs and then how they tried to say, oh, well, there were, you know, there were a weather balloon or they were this or that. The cover-up started to happen then. Back then, back in the 50s, they started to, you know, the disinformation group came out to dissuade people from believing in all of that. But the truth of it was, those of us who came in knowing, like myself, I mean, we were excited. I remember being very excited about that. And I never believed that it was a weather balloon at Roswell. Although I didn't know anything about the conspiracies and the disinformation and all of that, I was totally innocent of that, as most of us were back then. But I do remember the headlines of the paper and the joy I felt. I knew that was my family, my real family, and that they had come from my home place, and I had the hope then, of course, that I would be able to return to it. So this proceeded. John and I moved to Los Angeles, and we moved to Santa Barbara, and then we moved to John Rogers' ashram, Prana, as some of the early residents. In 1974, we moved in, but we kept going back and forth to see Van. And we were close to his second wife, whom he called Mouse, and I think her name was also Doris, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he always called her Mouse, and we called him Fan. So we get a phone call. We're in Los Angeles now, living in John Rogers' ashram, Prana. And we get this call from Doris saying that Fan had just had a heart attack, and if we could please, please come as soon as we possibly could. So John and I get up. It's late at night. We jump in our car. We drive as fast as we can, the 2.5 hours to get to her in Landers, or to where he had been taken to the hospital, actually. He had since passed, and we saw his body lying on the gurney. And so we comforted her, and we took his clothing and everything, and drove his car that he had been driving when he had the heart attack. We drove his car back to their house and stayed with her, to comfort her. And while we were in the car, all of a sudden we heard Van's voice. And he said, "Hey, you guys, you got to come up here. You got to see this. This is fantastic." And he was up in the Ashtar Command, aboard ship. And he was so excited and so thrilled. I don't even know that he was aware that he had passed out of his body. They probably took him out of the body before he even knew that, he was out of the body. And he was just back home with the Ashtar Command. I found it interesting, too, that George Adamski actually is aboard ship. He's a Venusian and has a name very similar to his Venusian name. I forget what it was, but it's very similar to Adamski. And he's well-known within the Venusian Space Command, within the Ashtar Command, as the man that lived on Earth and was a major contact for the space people. Now, in his book, Inside the Spaceships, which if you can still get a copy of it, it's like the best read ever of his experiences aboard ship, he met with a Martian and a Venusian. And their cover names in the book are Furkan for the Martian and I'm going to space out now on the second name. Orthon. Orthon was the Venusian, but Orthon was really, truly the uncle, Odin, of Omnic Onik, who is the spacewoman who densified her physical body on Venus, her astral body on Venus, to come into the physical dimension of the Earth. And she's still alive. She's still living on in America, in Missouri. And is recovering. Unfortunately, she's recovering from a stroke still. But she's still on the planet. She's a friend of mine. I've had letters from her and communication with her earlier years when at one point we were even planning to live together because, as she put it, we have the same mission. But she has a whole history involving Paul Twitchell and Ekankar, who was a very good friend of hers. And when she came from Venus, she landed in a way station in the northern Himalayan Tibetan range called a spiritual city called Agam Des. And it's a place where many of the space people come in to integrate and get prepared to move out into the physical society. And so Omnic Onik, when she densified her astral body to come into physical embodiment on Earth, she's not a walk-in. She's actually wearing her Venusian body, but vibrating, so it shows up here. She met Paul Twitchell and Darwin Gross in Agam Des, and they were preparing to bring the teachings from Venus, which is called Ekankar. Actually, it's not called Ekankar on Venus. It's called Om Notia Zedia. But on Earth, Paul Twitchell named it Ekankar, which actually is probably from the Sikh Ek Onkar, which means God is one. She and Paul Twitchell were good friends, and when she was in Agam Des getting prepared to take on her Earth mission, which was to take over the body of a young girl, 7 years old, who had passed away. Not the body of, but the place of. She was being replaced by a young girl who had passed away in a bus accident and was on her way to live with her grandmother, whom she had never met but looked very much like. So anyway, she was accepted into this family down south and raised by them. And then while she was in Agam Des and preparing to enter this new life, she met Paul Twitchell and Darwin Gross and was told that the teachings from Venus would not be introduced into the world until 1965, when they would start Ekankar. And then MSIA is the same teaching. We work a little bit more under the Sananda Jesus frequency than Ekankar does, but it's basically the same teaching. It's the same Venusian teaching. John Roger was my master teacher on Venus. And so, you know, it's all from the same family. But that teaching is the teaching of divine light and sound. So it's no mistake or coincidence that the Integratron is going to be, I believe, used as a great resonating energy field of divine light and sound to regenerate the cells, cellular matter. I believe that we will have a landing from the command and a rebooting of, a completing and rebooting of the Integratron after we've gotten through the next couple years, which I think will be years of great change, transformation, and if we're going to have any severe earth changes, it would be during the next, within the next 2 years, I believe. I mean, I'm speculating here, but it looks like that's what we're headed into, is extraordinary changes to have that certain clearing out that Sai Baba said was necessary for the souls that are absolutely unwilling or unable to live in unconditional divine love. They have to resonate that divine love to be able to integrate the energies that are coming in now of great transformation. And I'm getting more and more reports of people who are aware of spiritual energy, who are very conscious of spiritual energy, and who also went through that great shift the end of December into January that I have described in several of the seminars that I've gone through. So there's more and more people that are remarking about the tremendous change that took place. Something happened, big time, the end of December into this January. And the people who are spiritual teachers out there, or psychics, or channels, or energy empaths, they're aware of it more than the average person, who may, in fact, experience it as being very disruptive and bringing in things that they don't understand and don't know how to cope with. So be compassionate, you teachers and counselors and people who are working with people. I believe that we will have very soon emissaries that will physically be on television and introduce who they are. There won't be a necessity to say other than the truth, like I have. My whole life, I have never, ever hid the fact that I'm from Venus, that I came in awake and aware. I can remember talking about that my whole life. I never, ever held back from just speaking the truth. It just didn't seem, it never occurred to me not to. And so I think that as more and more people come forward and just normally share, yes, I'm from Saturn, I'm from Venus, I'm from Mars, I'm from wherever they're from, and I've been living on Earth such and such a time, and, you know, all of this sort of thing is going to be so normal. And you're going to see these aren't, you know, ugly lizards or, you know, people that are here to do evil. Do such things exist? I don't know. I have never, ever had any experience of a negative type with extraterrestrials. That's just not in my reality. I have no personal experience of it. Maybe I was protected. I don't know. But I just haven't experienced any of that dark. Maybe I'm living in a different dimensional reality. I actually think I am. But anyway, that's not part of my direct experience, and I do not speak of things that are not my direct experience. I think it's very important to stay very, very present with your direct experience. One other thing I want to tell you that's really interesting. The Integratron, a big chunk of it fell off, and that's tied in with James Twyman. James Twyman, you have to know about James Twyman. I think his books are absolute must-reads, and particularly Emissaries of Light. He describes the prophecy that was fulfilled by that chunk of giant rock falling off. And it has to do with him. It has to do with the native prophecies. It has to do with a priest here in Los Angeles that was part of this group that witnessed when the bolt of lightning came through and the rock shattered or came off. You know, big chunk came off of giant rock. And it's very good. I think it had something to do with the fact that we're going to make it. We're going to make it just fine through this transformation. I think that was like the proof. You'll have to read his book, Emissaries of Light, to get the full story, which I highly recommend. The other book that I think is a must-read is The Secret of the Beloved Disciple, about Mother Mary and how he met Mother Mary. And physically, you know, you know, good-looking girl that he was coming on to before he realized it was Mother Mary. But pick up some of these wonderful interwoven stories that have to do with the Ashtar Command, have to do with the transformation we're going through on the planet, have to do with giant rock, have to do with the Native American prophecies. Oh, there's so much good stuff. And anyway... Do read Omnic Onnic's book and on the Venusian teachings. You can Google her, Omnic, O-M-N-E-C, Onnic, O-N-E-C. Just Google it and you can find her book. You can get it on Amazon and see if you can get Inside the Spaceships by George Adamski. Oh, you're going to love that book. And there's just so many wonderful things. You know, I was just part of all of that group. I met nearly every one of these early contactees. I didn't meet, unfortunately, I didn't meet Adamski, and I could have. I mean, we lived so close by, and, you know, he was still alive. But I did meet many, many, many of the other ones and have direct experience with many of them. And it's beautiful. It's such a different take that you'll get when you talk to the 50s and 60s and 70s contactees and the people today that, golly, have really been portrayed in an ugly light. I'm so sorry that that was done because now people have a fearful imagery around the space people, and that's totally unnecessary. If you but knew the love and the compassion and caring that these great beings have, you would never fear them. And so the astral entities and interdimensional beings that have come out of the collective subconscious, they're pretty scary. But you have to know they come out of the collective subconscious and they're not actually space people. They're interdimensional. You might call them ghosts. Well, they're a little more tangible than ghosts, but they're certainly, you know, they come from a level of consciousness that is not the same thing that we're talking about when we talk about the Ashtar Galactic Command. There's nothing of that within what I've experienced with the Venusians and the Ashtar Command. So I had to kind of rush to get all that information in, but I think you'll find it interesting. It's part of history, And go see the Integratron. You know, it's, I think it's part of our future. I really do. I think we're going to see it up and running, and it'll be part of all of those wonderful mystery schools and ashrams when Lord Maitreya comes forward and the masters of wisdom that are incarnated on Earth. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful world. And you know what? You don't have a thing to worry about. Everything that you fear that's going to happen is not going to happen. And everything that you hope in your wildest imagination is going to happen is going to happen. So take that and rejoice, and be happy, and don't worry about anything, because the changes are going to be divinely orchestrated, and everybody will go to the reality they want. So it's not like a negative thing. Everybody gets to go and receive what they want as their reality, and they won't even notice the shift. And for you and I and those of us that are the people of love, the people of light, we're simply going to be with our own kind. And we won't even remember any of the other. It'll just be as if it never happened at all. And in highest truth, it didn't, because we know that this is a big cosmic illusion in which we are now awaking and finding that we've never left home. We've never left the heart of love. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting on IHU. And remember to send that love and light with every thought, every word, every gesture, every chant to all sentient beings, that all may be happy, all peaceful, all awakened to the love that they are. Because that is the truth. We are love. Okay, deep breath. On IHU, on IHU, on IHU. Wow, I just saw this huge royal blue flash a few inches in front of me. And that was a blessing. I'm getting that's a blessing from Lord Ashtar to each of you listening and joined with Lord Sananda Kumara, which is the galactic Christ essence of the Lord Jesus. On Earth, he's known as Jesus. And aboard ship, he's known as Sananda Kumara. So blessings and grace from Ashtar, Sananda, and the entire Galactic Command. And myself, Commander Lady Athena. And may all manner of things be well with you and your world. Namaste.